Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, you guessed it. St. Paul says to think about these things. Boy, if you can find those qualities, yes, think about them and talk about them. They need some good press. That is what we do here on Call Me Catholic. We give good press to all the good things in the world. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, an hour of light and lively conversation about embracing our Catholic identity in these modern times. Hopefully we'll affirm your resolve to wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Say hello to Jimmy G, my highly talented engineer and chief fact checker. Hey, Jimmy G brought a little fan club into the studio today, didn't you, Jimmy G?
Yes, we got quite the crowd here today.
We do.
I brought my mom and my sister.
Yeah, everybody say hi to Mary Ellen and Karen. Sue Ellen and Karen. I'm sorry.
They're waving.
Yes, they're big fans of Jimmy G's, understandably. And if you'd like to actually see what's going on in our studio, you can go to our Facebook page. Go to Facebook and then just type in Call Me Catholic. And Marvelous Matt, our call screener, will put up a link, and you just tap on that link and it will take you right to a live streaming video of what's going on in our studio. And we've got quite a lot of nice looking people in our studio today, and it's always fun to know we've got some people looking in on us.
You can watch the show.
Keeping us honest. Yeah, you can see what's going on in our little studio here on the 8th floor. Now, you won't be able to see that our studio is actually high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. This is the Diocese of Orange. I think it's considered the fastest growing diocese in the country. Very impressive numbers. Hey, so two more weeks of Lent. Jimmy G, how has your Lent been going?
It's going well, you know, little fits and starts, but it's going okay.
Well, it seems like when it begins on Ash Wednesday that it's like this distant horizon until we reach Easter Sunday.
But now all of a sudden it's April.
The countdown begins. Well, yeah. Hey, and today is April 1st, so I may be pulling a joke on you.
Okay. Well, during the live show, we'll see.
Dubious looks.
Careful.
From Jimmy G. Okay, well, tomorrow's gospel account, it's the fifth Sunday of Lent, and it's one of Jesus' most moving miracles, rising his friend Lazarus from the dead. It's moving because it appears to be very personal, and several references in the reading imply that Jesus had a deep friendship with Lazarus and with his family, with his sisters. And it's a very, very emotional story. There are powerful verbs in there describing the state of everyone in this story. Jesus is said to be perturbed and troubled, mentioned several times. The women are weeping. When Jesus approaches Lazarus's tomb, his demeanor was such that the onlookers said, "See how he loved him." So Jesus must have been really visibly heartbroken. And these apparent emotions culminate with the miracle of Lazarus walking out of the tomb, his little tomb room, bound still in his burial cloths. It's truly one of Jesus' most dramatic miracles. But you know what? Miracles don't stop at the New Testament. They carry on to our modern times. Miracles, remarkable acts of divine intervention, continue to play out in the world around us. Every saint, and we have a lot of saints, we got a huge communion of saints, they have numerous miracles that have been attributed to them.
That's right.
Now, here's another interesting thing. As Catholics, we are not bound to believe in miracles. Just two big ones that we have to believe in.
The two biggies,
the incarnation of Christ and the resurrection of Christ. Now, if you don't believe in those, you got to reconsider your faith there. I mean, it's pretty much anchors everything we believe in right there. So those are the two pillars on which our faith rests. But what's interesting is that Christ expressed a certain annoyance with wonder seekers. And he said, unless you see signs and wonders, you don't believe. You know, he was kind of frustrated. But on the other hand, he promises his disciples that they will work signs even greater than the ones he has worked. So Jesus really understood our human nature, our desire to be awestruck and to marvel at the passage, "For nothing is impossible with God." That's really what miracles attest to. You know, I think of miracles as kind of a B12 shot to our faith. Don't you think? Just like a little oof, pow, boom.
It's a good word picture.
We all love them. Who doesn't want to believe in miracles? But here's the thing. Sometimes God works through us to achieve little miracles for other people. And we should always be open to that. Now, we're going to unpack that with that means today on Call Me Catholic. Now, I'm talking about small miracles with a small S or a small M and big miracles with a big M. Okay. Tristan Siegendahler is the faith relationships manager, faith relations manager. And they develop relationships too for Habitat for Humanity in Orange County. And together with Father Tim Raymakers, pastor of Corpus Christi Parish in the Diocese of Orange, is mobilizing other Catholic parishes in our diocese to help build homes for local families in need.
Love
and
that.
Don't you think receiving the key to your very own home feels like a miracle to the family that receives it?
No question. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story of how to make manifest God's love with some bricks and mortar. Mm. That is coming up in a minute. And then in Chatting with Catholics, I will talk with Michael O'Neill. He's also known as the Miracle Hunter.
Oh.
Got your attention, huh? Because he has made his life's work seeking out and exploring the miraculous. His television show, They Might Be Saints, will debut on EWTN next month. Isn't that cool?
The Miracle Whisperer? Hunter.
The Miracle Hunter, like the House Hunter and all those other hunters that they have. But before all that good stuff, we need to address the Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week will be the top five categories of miracles within our good church. It's kind of an instructional Call Me Catholic Countdown this week. Don't worry, there's not going to be a quiz, I don't think. The countdown is always open to listener scrutiny.
And it's open book.
It is an open book quiz or an open book list. You can correct me if you'd like to correct me. I always stand corrected. So let me know if I get this right. Here we go. The top five categories of miracles within our good church. And there might be more too.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
You know, Jimmy, we need to find a mellower announcement when the Call Me Catholic Countdown is kind of mellow. Or a little more spiritual.
Yeah,
some bells.
These were recorded way back when we started the show. I probably should do a redo on some.
Yeah, let's get one that's kind of has a sort of a spiritual nature, and then some that has maybe kind of a fun nature,
mellow
and then,
countdown,
and then sort of a serious newsy nature.
Or I could just not use it at all.
No. I like it. It kind of announces it. We need that demarcation line. Okay, number five in our list is a Marian apparition. Now, these are occasions when someone encounters a vision or a visitation from the Blessed Mother. The Catholic Church is very cautious to approve these accounts, understandably. There's a very strict protocol through the Vatican. But some scholars claim there have been over 2,500 apparition claims throughout history. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Many of them are attributed to our saints or our blessed. Some have had a profound impact on history. Fatima, Lourdes, and of course, my favorite, Guadalupe. We do not have to believe these apparition miracles, but why wouldn't you? I mean, they carry enduring and enlightening insights, little windows into our relationship with God and Mary's role in salvation. Okay, number four is the stigmata. The stigmata as a form of miracle. This is when the wounds of Christ from his crucifixion miraculously appear on a holy person's body. It's not what I would call a happy miracle because it always is associated with pain and suffering,
which
also is sometimes accompanied by ecstasy. But it's all the holy wounds, and it's a manifestation of someone's utter and complete devotion to Christ and their desire for a union with him. So the importance is their example to us of complete and utter handing yourself over to Christ, including, you know, interesting too, 80% of the people that have received stigmatics, I think they're called, are women.
Is that right?
Yeah, we think of St. Francis, we think of Padre Pio, but actually women. Okay, number three are incorruptibles. Now, these are the miraculous preservation of the corpses of our holy deceased. This is particularly fascinating to children, I think. So when you're traveling through Europe, be sure and find those incorruptibles and show them to children. There are a lot of incorruptible saints. Now, there are different degrees of decay and preservation in these corpses, and many feel their unique embalming techniques or perfect environmental conditions contributed to the phenomena. But despite all the doubts which arise concerning the veracity of incorruptibility claims, the phenomena still does not have an acceptable scientific explanation.
Oh.
Now, the Catholic Church here again has been cautious in making definitive statements about incorruptible discoveries, but they have been used as one of the prerequisite miracles for canonization.
So, absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, okay.
They really are.
Number two is medical miracles. You know, medical miracles we see in our lifetime, medical recoveries that cannot be explained by doctors. A couple of weeks ago, we had a priest in our studio that talked about a young woman here that we believe has experienced a miraculous recovery from a terrible, traumatic incident where a tree just crushed her 13-year-old body, and they did not think she would survive. And the Norbertine priests, who are local to our religion, who have an order here in Orange County, invited all of their parishioners to, and their followers to start playing to their blessed James Kern for his intercession in her complete recovery. And it looks like that is coming through. Amazing. Mm. And number one in my list of interesting Catholic categories of miracles are the Eucharistic miracles. Now, this is a supernatural phenomena associated with a consecrated host. And I love these miracles. They are so intrinsically Catholic because as Catholics, we believe that the consecrated host and wine are true body and true blood of Jesus Christ. And so throughout history, God has given us the occasional tangible evidence of this mystery through Eucharistic miracles. And that's when the host has been tested to actually contain human flesh. There was a very interesting example in Buenos Aires that involved our current Pope, then Cardinal Bergoglio, where a priest found a host. It was impaled on a candlestick. So he, instead of consuming it, he dissolved it in water. And when he went to check it out 2 days later in his tabernacle, he found it had turned to blood and it was like flesh.
Wow.
So Cardinal Bergoglio told him, just let's take some pictures and let's just leave it alone for a couple of years. And when they went back, they found it was in the same state. They sent it for scientific discovery without any explanation of what it was. They just said, let us know what you find. And it turns out it was actual human DNA, heart, muscle, tissue.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
Wow.
So there you have it. Five categories of miracles that help keep the Catholic Church interesting and often in the news. I love miracles. Hey, it's a miracle. Call Me Catholic has a Facebook page. 2 years ago, I didn't have any knowledge of social media. And today we have almost 1,500 followers on our Call Me Catholic Facebook page. So join the phenomena.
That's
and give
a
us a like on Facebook.
Is it a miracle that the show's still
it's
on?
It's a miracle.
No, I'm just kidding.
A true blue. Or you can send us an email to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. Hey, we've got Tristan Siegendahler, Faith Relations Manager for Habitat for Humanity in Orange County, and Father Tim Raymakers from Corpus Christi Parish in the Diocese of Orange, up next to talk about the miracle they're making happen for a local family through the generosity of 15 Catholic parishes here in Orange County. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hey, welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, with some miracle workers in the studio with me today. Well, they wouldn't call themselves that. But since tomorrow's gospel recounts one of Jesus' most moving and dramatic miracles with the rising of his friend Lazarus, I thought it would be a good opportunity to explore the way we can channel God's love to work small miracles in the world around us. Our guests are doing just that. Tristan Siegendahler is the Faith Relations Manager for Habitat for Humanity, Orange County, and as such, she is spearheading a Catholic coalition among 15 parishes in the Diocese of Orange to build a house for a family in need. One of those parishes is Corpus Christi Catholic Church in Aliso Viejo, and she has brought the pastor of that parish, Father Tim Raymakers, with her today to share with our listeners how they are making this miracle happen. Tristan and Father Tim, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you.
I'm so glad you guys are here in our studio today. Now, I want to also mention to our listeners right now at this point that you might want to join this conversation. We're going to be talking about Habitat for Humanity. Maybe your parish has gotten involved in it. Maybe your youth group was committed to a project. Give us a call and give your testimony. Share your comments with us. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt, our call screener, will patch you right through to our conversation. So, Tristan, you are the Faith Relations Manager for Habitat for Humanity in Orange County. And we're kind of a new community here in Orange County. Let's go back to the history and the foundation of Habitat, which started in the South, because I think a lot of people immediately conjure up an image of a house being built when you hear Habitat for Humanity, but a lot of people don't know its history.
Sure.
What year was it started? Was it like 1965, I believe?
Yeah, so it's been around since around that time.
Okay, and can you correct a myth that Jimmy Carter actually founded Habitat for Humanity?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite myths. We love Jimmy Carter. He's actually one of our most famous volunteers, but it was started by a lawyer named Millard Fuller in the South.
Yeah. And what prompted him to start this ministry?
So he saw a good, hardworking family in his neighborhood that was struggling, and he felt like he didn't understand why. And he wanted to correct that by getting everyone together and kind of lifting up this one family. And he saw what it did for the community, and it just kind of steamrolled from there.
Well, you know, I also had read about Millard Fuller, that he and his wife were very, very wealthy. He had built a fortune. Mm-hmm. And at the pinnacle of his wealth and success, his wife said, "This marriage is empty and I'm leaving you." And so together he said, no, let's rethink this. What can we do? What can we do to make our life richer? And together they decided they needed to use their wealth to sort of lift up the people around them. And in the South, of course, there was a great deal of poverty in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So he started it there. And now, how many years later, here we are in 2017, they have built 400,000 homes and 2 million people have been housed because of them. Father Tim, you are the pastor of a very well-established, beautiful parish in Orange County, in Aliso Viejo, Corpus Christi Parish. How did you get involved with Habitat for Humanity?
Well, Tristan reached out to us, and she invited us to consider it. And when she came to visit and to speak to us, that is members of our staff, we came to the decision quickly because this is a wonderful thing. And I said yes. Yeah.
And you were glad for that. Right, Tristan?
Oh, my gosh. They are clearly on fire as a parish and a community, so they've been an asset.
So as a faith relations manager for Habitat for Humanity, you are specifically reaching out to faith groups to help them sort of mobilize and get together in their own community mm-hmm. to do this. So is this the first one for the Catholic Church here in Orange County?
So we've had some individual parishes sponsor homes. Our Lady Queen of Angels has been a big advocate, and some others as well. But this is the first time we've come together as a coalition. And I think Catholic being the word universal, mm-hmm. this is right up our alley to collaborate and do it together.
And that's the whole idea with Habitat for Humanity, isn't it? To go out there and build a house, you know, just bring whatever resource, whatever talent, whatever tool you've got, and we'll put you to work. And it's sort of Amish, actually, when you think about it. It's like raising the frame of the house. It's a beautiful concept. So let's get back to Habitat and how they work. So how does Habitat find the family that will receive this gift of a home?
Right. So you mentioned Millard Fuller and his personal life and his community. So faith has always been at the center of that. So faith is at the center of Habitat for Humanity. We rely on our parishes and church communities to bring us families that are in good standing, that are working hard, that are struggling. We know that in Orange County, that can be anybody that you may know, and they may be suffering quietly. So we rely on our faith communities to bring us partners. We also rely on the veteran community to bring us veterans.
Yeah. I think actually Our Lady Queen of Angels did a home for a veteran, as I recall.
I'm sure they did. And actually our Catholic Coalition project is also for a veteran family as well. So
okay, so let's talk about what does that mean, the Catholic Coalition. Did you spearhead, was this your idea?
It wasn't, actually. There were five or so South County parishes that wanted to get together and do some build days with Habitat. And they had some really grand ideas about bringing the bishop in. And I got them together and I said, you know, if you guys really want to do the grandest thing you can do with Habitat, that's build a house. But we can't do it with just the five of you. So we have to start asking for more help. And it's really incredible. As you said, not every parish can shoulder the responsibility right. of the financial component mm-hmm. of building a home. But there are plenty of parishes that have plenty of skilled labor workers. And we can divide up the division of labor. And we can use all of our talents and gifts in different ways. So that's how it came about.
Well, and that's almost insurmountable, to take all these people and to give them constructive jobs on a job site. You know, like, I will be honest with you, full disclosure, our family, we have three sons, and when they were young, we went and worked on a job site. And they gave my young sons a hammer, they gave my husband a paintbrush, they gave somebody some nails, they gave me the water to distribute.
That's an important role.
I think my husband had sort of given them a little precursor secret that, you know, she's not good with a hammer. And keep her away from the tools.
Oh, no.
So, Father Tim, have you started this home that you guys, the coalition, is going to build?
We haven't started it yet, but we've generated a lot of excitement. We start this summer, so we're really looking forward to it.
And have you identified the family, the recipients?
We haven't. And what a blessing it would be to identify it within the Catholic Coalition bringing us a family. That would be amazing. But no, we're still working on finding a family.
So what are the stages of this? First, you get a piece of property? Mm-hmm. And is that usually donated to you?
We try to go that direction. We never stop our construction. We never stop our mission. So sometimes we have to buy land. That's a last resort. But mm-hmm. we work a lot with the cities and various private entities.
And then, like with any home building project, you have the architect sort of design what the best use of that space would be. Mm-hmm. So is that a volunteer usually?
Yes, we work with an architecture firm that's been with us for a long time. They're really wonderful.
And then you get into the actual construction. I know you have to go through all the city approvals and things like that. But do you have a skilled general contractor on the site that's actually employed?
We do, yes, with Habitat. We always have a site supervisor. We're very keen on safety.
Well, that would be OSHA would have a say in that, too. Hey, we're talking about Habitat for Humanity and the way the Catholic Church is getting involved in it, specifically here in Orange County. Maybe you have had an experience with Habitat as a young person, as an adult, as a parish member. So give us a call and join the conversation and share your comments with us. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We're talking about Habitat for Humanity. So Father Tim, when this project was first introduced to your parish, what was the response?
Oh, unbelievable. I mentioned it at all the masses. I incorporated it in the homily. And when I said that, the people applauded. They applauded. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, people go to work to make a living, but they go to church to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And people really want to make a difference in the life of others. And so I'm really proud of our community and the fact that they're behind it. And Tristan will be with us this weekend to break it further open for our community.
So what are they
involved?
Father, what are they asking of, or what are you asking of your parishioners through this appeal? Are you asking for their time, for their treasure? Are you asking for their volunteer work or their skills?
All of the above. All of the above.
Okay.
Asking them to pray. We're asking for their treasure. And we're asking them to step forward and to help. I think this is a great opportunity for families.
Yes, you know, totally is. Because you know what? Here's the thing. To write a check to a cause is one thing, but to actually sort of be involved in a beginning and an end to a project that's going to make a difference, and you're going to see the difference, and the difference is in your community at large, it really appeals to people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Father sort of hit on something there. I often tell people we're an organization of and. And you cannot getting involved with Habitat is not for the faint of heart. we're going to ask you for everything that you're willing to give us, including your free time, your physical labor. Yeah. So to have a parish like theirs and the others involved with the coalition to step forward and say, okay, you can have it all. Is such a blessing and an expression of our faith.
Well, Father Tim, what are you most looking forward to in getting involved in this project? Does it appeal to your manly sense of, I want to get in and give me a hammer and give me a buzz saw?
I see him with the hammer.
Yeah. Actually, I jokingly tell my siblings when they ask me to extend a hand and help, my hands are anointed. So I will. So what I'll do is I'll hand out the water. I'll be
you
the
and
one.
Me.
Yes, I'll join you and I'll supply the water. No, actually, I'm just looking forward to being a part of the community and meeting other people and making a difference and being with people who really care and want to make a difference.
Well, it will be a kind of an administrative challenge to coordinate all these parishes and all this labor. How will you go about that, Tristan?
Oh, it's going to be a very delicate dance. but actually, one of the things that we're hoping to do is to get a mix of parishes. So not just having one parish on the
site. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, so we're working on that as we speak. And we have actually a three-day youth project in the works that's already collaborative.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Because this is something that just screams young adult to get out there and they have fun. They don't even think of it as work.
Mm-hmm.
I know my son got involved with it during college. You know, I think they have habitats where the colleges get involved and kind of sign up for a couple of weeks here and there. So they have these big banners on the houses that list all the colleges that came and worked on the project. So, yeah, it's really rewarding and satisfying. Hey, if you have a testimony of your work with Habitat for Humanity, give us a call at 714 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We're talking with Tristan Siegendahler, who is the Faith Relations Manager for Habitat for Humanity Orange County, and Father Tim Raymakers, who is the pastor of Corpus Christi Parish, one of those Catholic churches in Orange County that responded with great enthusiasm and alacrity when asked if they would like to help build a home for a family in need here in Orange County. And what a beautiful testimony of our faith. So join the conversation and tell us what you think. I am Peggy Normandin, and you are listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We'll be right back with you with more of this conversation. Stay with us.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hey friends, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I'm your host, Peggy Normandin, with some guests who are living out the gospel. Tomorrow, the fifth Sunday of Lent, gives us the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. Tristan Siegendahler, Faith Relations Manager for Habitat for Humanity, and Father Tim Raymakers, Pastor of Corpus Christi Parish in Aliso Viejo, are helping raise up a house for a family in Orange County. How do you like that correlation, Jimmy G? I thought I did a good job.
That was really
raising
clever.
The dead, raising a house.
But you never surprised me because you pull those things out all the time.
Well, we can all agree that this will certainly breathe new life into a family's future. Father Tim, now you told us in the last segment that your parish responded very, very enthusiastically. Did you ask him right up for money? Because sometimes that's when people say, gee, look at the time, gotta go. I'll get back at you, Father.
No, but I did say, I kind of forewarned them that, you know, we will have a representative from Habitat for Humanity out to speak to us, and that part of our skin in the game, shall we say, is the stewardship of treasure, so that we are being asked to financially support this endeavor. At Corpus Christi, no one batted an eye because it's a very generous parish, and they've always have stepped up whenever there's been a need.
So how did that collection basket look? You were telling us how you went about it.
Well, actually, the collection is going to be this weekend.
Okay, this weekend.
And as I said, Tristan is going to be out with us this weekend. And two families who have been blessed through the work, the outreach of Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing to hear the account of a family that's been the recipient. And, you know, because sometimes people can, we see this in the gospel readings, sometimes people can forget about the miracle that transformed their life. Not so much Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. I think they went on to France and they became martyrs. But sometimes we forget. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. This house was a gift. But most of the people, it's very, very moving. Have you experienced any really transformative stories from your families, Tristan?
I've heard some wonderful experiences. There was a mom who said that there were a family of four who was living in a one-bedroom home, and they all slept in the same bed, so they were all very close together. And when they received their home, she had to rub her daughter's feet at night because they weren't used to having their own room.
Yeah,
the space. They were all used to touching all of the time, and I just don't think any of our families should have to go through that. And she said that it was such a gift to be able to transition her daughters into their own bedroom.
Well, but what a beautiful image of intimacy, too, that clearly that wasn't something they looked at as poverty and deprivation. They looked at it as intimacy, and
That's
it became
right.
sort of an essential component. Right. Hey, we've got a caller with us today, a listener, Chuck from Long Beach, who is listening to Call Me Catholic on iHeartRadio. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Chuck.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call, Peggy.
Did you say here that you used to, I see that you used to be a volunteer with Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah, so I actually did in college. I did two separate spring break trips with an organization called CAVE at Chico State. And the first year we did Lafayette, Louisiana, and we were on three different work sites with Habitat for Humanity. And then the second year I did it, we went to Elgin, which is kind of a suburb of Chicago, and we built a house there. I just heard you guys talking about the family stories, and it was really cool because in both trips that I took, we got to meet the families that were going to soon live in this house.
That's nice.
We got to work, they also worked on their home with us, and it was really cool to get to know them and their story. And just, super awesome experiences to have in college. and to work alongside your peers in something that's really worthwhile and kind of a selfless act. It's really awesome.
Well, Chuck, when you show up at the site, do you really have jobs, or is there a lot of stand-around time when you're sort of saying, well, give me something to do, or do they put you to work and do they give you a task that's done in a day?
Oh, they absolutely give you a task. I don't know if it's done in a day, but, I mean, I didn't have any construction experience before Habitat, but now I feel like I can do all these things. They give us
put it on your resume, huh?
Yeah, it was more than just painting and hammering. It was like one day we spent the whole day siding the house, putting up these panels and kind of leveling them out and nailing them in and, you know, making sure at the end they're all aligned up and look really nice.
Well, yeah, and so there's good instruction, on-site instruction, helping and guiding you and giving you the directions on what you're supposed to be doing. If you've never had experience with that, you really need that kind of supervision.
Yeah, there was a professional contractor on each of our sites and some additional kind of guiding hands that had experience, you know, volunteers that had experience building homes that could kind of give you some tutorial on it all.
Well, Chuck, you went twice. So what would you say was the most, you obviously were called back to do it again. A college spring break is not often used for philanthropy. What did you find the most rewarding aspect of this?
Yeah, well, it isn't a typical spring break. And I think that's what kind of called me back in the sense that I was, you know, spending a week doing something worthwhile, making a difference. As corny as that may sound.
It doesn't sound corny at all. It sounds cool.
It's amazing.
But also kind of meeting the people that get to call this place, this construction site, their home one day, and giving them that that comfortable setting to make their family. I think that's pretty special. And
that's beautiful, Chuck. And God bless you for your work and your ministry. I imagine you will continue to stay involved and tapped into what Habitat is doing because of that deep commitment and that bond you formed with them during your college years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And God bless you. Thank you so much for your work.
Chuck.
You sound like a great guy.
All right. Thank you very much, Peggy. Love. Call me Catholic.
Thank you, Chuck. Bye bye. Hey, Tristan, how long does it take from the groundbreaking to the time you turn the key over to the family?
With Habitat OC, it takes anywhere from 8 months to 1 year. We've had a lot of rain recently.
Oh, yeah,
God
this year has been a little tough on construction.
But that does, that does delay construction a little bit.
And what kind of funds do you look for, seed money, to really start this project? Because I know that you get a lot of things volunteered, but you must have to invest in, you know, like you said, you sometimes have to invest in the land. Some materials you probably have to invest in. Some things you might be bound to actually pay for.
Well, construction costs in Orange County are always going up, and we're the third most expensive place to live in the country. Mm-hmm. So for Habitat for Humanity, it costs us about $400,000 to $500,000 to build a home, and that includes our volunteers.
That's a very high price per square foot.
Price.
So Orange County is a tough place to raise money, I would imagine.
Right, of course, yeah. So we're blessed to have tenacious volunteers, and the Catholic Coalition has committed to $150,000 financial responsibility to our home.
Wow.
And so we're on our way. We're doing
so groundbreaking this summer, right?
That's right.
All right. That's awesome. Hey, we have Jim from San Clemente, California, who's calling with a question for Tristan and Father Tim. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Jim. How are you listening to Call Me Catholic, by the way?
Streaming it.
Streaming it. Okay, great. So you're watching us on the video?
I'm not.
Oh, okay. You're just streaming
at home, right now, the audio.
So. Okay. Because we were going to wave to you.
Oh, well, you can wave. I'll imagine. I'll watch.
We'll do the wave. Hey, so did you have a question for our Habitat specialist, Jim?
Yes. I was wondering if I know a family who might be eligible, how would I connect them with Habitat
for
Humanity to see if they have some might benefit from the program?
That's a great question. We're always looking for families to better understand our program. I would invite you to either go with them or invite them to come into our office. We open bright and early at 8:30 in the morning. And they can come in. Our Family Services Department is friendly and wonderful, and they'll sit down and they'll walk them through the entire process.
So how soon into the building project do you make a determination of who will receive the house?
So they start a selection right around the time the house breaks ground, so that we give the family enough time to prep for the requirements,
as well
to put in their 500 hours of sweat equity.
So the family that is going to move in also has to invest in it. Sweat equity.
They have to build it as well.
And then they have to assume the financial responsibilities of the home once it's turned over to
them. They take on a mortgage.
So, Jim, did that adequately answer your question? Tristan, why don't you tell him the website for the Orange County Catholic Habitat site?
Sure. It's pretty short. It's habitatoc.org, and they can find some general qualification information through our family services section of the website. But again, we have a very friendly, well-trained, well-informed staff in our family services department. I would urge them to go
in. Spoken without any bias at all. Hey, Jim, did that help you?
No appointment necessary.
No, absolutely not.
Just walking. Okay, that's great.
Well,
that
sounds
the question clearly.
That's a great question that I think a lot of listeners might have been wondering about. And God bless you for thinking of other people that might, you know, need this home and might deserve this home. So thanks. I hope I wish the best to the family you're thinking of.
Thank you all. Thank you, Peggy, for your show, and for Father Tim and Tristan for the work you're doing.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. God bless you. Hey, Father Tim, have you ever had any experience in previous parishes working with this kind of a large-scale ministry project, outreach project?
You know, I haven't. I know in my previous parishes, a lot of our work was just very local. You know, a lot of it was the St. Vincent de Paul and helping people in need, but never anything like this.
Yeah.
But that was probably because I didn't know, as a leader of the community, who to reach out to. Mm-hmm. And it was Tristan who came to us. And that's why, once she gave us this opportunity, I just said, let's go
jump
for
at it.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have a great cheerleader in Father Tim, Tristan.
I know. He's a blessing.
What are some of the biggest obstacles you think you're going to face in completing this project?
Well, we need to hit our financial goal.
Okay.
We need to organize all of the volunteers. Sometimes there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen and a lot of people want to help. We have to make sure we have room for everybody to help. And then I would say that we definitely need prayer.
That's a good one, right? Yeah. Well, Father Tim, are you excited about this then? And you're going to get out. Will you speak to other parishes? Because you had such a great response from your parish. Will you go out and speak to other parishes and kind of stir up the interest in other parishes? Or is this going to become kind of like a team thing? Team Corpus Christi versus team Holy Family versus team?
Well, I think we all like a little competition.
Little healthy,
you know?
Healthy competition.
And Corpus Christi is a one-priest parish, and so on the weekends, you know, I'm at Corpus Christi celebrating Mass. So going to other parishes on a weekend, probably not possible.
Okay. Well, Father,
he's a great example, though.
He is a great example. You can see he has so much devotion and enthusiasm for this. I think you're going to have a big success, though, because I think this is a cause and a type of volunteer work that really resonates with people. It's boots on the ground, so to speak, in a very positive way. And I really hope you get a lot of young people, too, because I think this is, you know, as you could hear from our caller, Chuck, this really resonates with the younger families and, I mean, young guys.
It's transformative for everybody.
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We could have Father live stream across the country.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
In front of a camera.
Yes.
Well, Tristan and Father Tim, thank you so much for being with us on this Lenten weekend to share the good news of how we can all find a way to live out the gospel and work miracles in others' lives. Father Tim, would you offer our listeners a closing prayer before we say goodbye?
Yes, a closing prayer and a blessing. Huh?
A blessing,
and I love the blessing from the book of Numbers.
Oh,
so,
wonderful.
Heavenly Father, bless Catholic Radio as it reaches out to the multitudes. Help us to keep in mind what St. Augustine once said, we without you cannot, and you without us will not. That you have a partnership with us and that we work with you and that together miracles do happen and water is transformed into wine and the dead are raised and lifted up. And together the world is restored and transformed. And so may the Lord bless us and keep us. May the Lord's face shine upon us and be gracious to us. May the Lord look upon us kindly and give us his peace, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, guys, and God bless your ministry and the best of luck to you. It was really fun. We have a good time here, but it's because we picked the best guests, don't we, Jimmy G?
Well, there you go.
We do.
You know what? EWTN is always on the look for new shows, for new programs, for new ways of disseminating information so that we can give you everything you need to know about our faith, our history, our living out of the faith, the devotions, the personalities, the questions, apologetics, all that kind of stuff. And they make themselves so available that there's no way you cannot be somewhere where you can reach EWTN. And what they have now available for all of our listeners and viewers, the people that watch the TV, is the EWTN app. And that allows you to carry it with you wherever you go, on your computer, on your phone. You can enjoy it, and you can enjoy the live streaming, like somebody called us earlier. Jim from San Clemente was listening to the live stream of EWTN.
Very handy.
Yeah, so check out the ways you can download the app. You can either go to the app store on your phone and just put in EWTN, click it, and no cost. You'll get it right up there at one of the icons on your phone. Or you can go to EWTNApps.com. So that's EWTNApps.com, and then follow all the prompts on there, and you'll get it on your computer. So it's just a win-win. It's very cool.
Gotta love technology. Gotta love it.
Hey, speaking, we're going to continue the conversation about miracles, kind of approaching it from a different standpoint here. Now, Michael O'Neill is a Relevant radio host, author, and creator of the website MiracleHunter.com, the web's top resource on Marian apparitions. He also is going to debut with a brand new EWTN show on television next month. It's called They Might Be Saints, about the canonization of miracles that are attributed to the saints. He has co-hosted the TV special Miracle Hunter, and we are very excited to welcome him onto the show. Hey, Michael, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Hey, I think it is so cool that you are going to have a brand new show next month. I didn't even know that when I contacted you. I contacted you because you were the Miracle Hunter. I didn't know you're going to have a whole new show on EWTN. Tell us first about that show.
Yeah, I'm so excited. This is something that's been in the works for some time, but the idea behind the show is that we're going to present some of these great heroes of our faith, these people, mostly Americans, who have a canonization cause in process. So those will be servants of God's venerables, blessed, who are on that path to sainthood. And as we all know, there are miracles that need to be validated in order for someone to be said to be with God in heaven. So
yeah, it can't really be a card trick.
Yes, yes. And being the miracle hunter, I love looking for miracles myself, so it's kind of a perfect fit to tell these great stories, these great role models and examples for our Catholic faith. And a lot of them are going to be Americans, so I think people are going to be really excited about that.
Well, we have, of course, Blessed Fulton Sheen, or is it Venerable Fulton Sheen? He's on the list. He's right on the cusp of being canonized. We need a good miracle for him.
That's right, and actually he has a miracle that's been validated. He's the only person in the Catholic Church who has a validated miracle but isn't a blessed, believe it or not. They're still hung up on where his relics are going to reside. So when that happens, he'll be a blessed in no time flat.
You know, I just have to ask you, Michael, how did you develop this really unique niche of knowledge from our faith about our faith?
Yeah, it is pretty interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's a pretty unique or perhaps strange, but I'd say it all kind of goes back to my mother, who had a great devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe. And when she was growing up as a young girl, her mother, my grandmother, actually fell away from the Catholic faith, and she prayed to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and like any good Catholic does, she made a deal with God, and she said, if you bring my mother back to the faith, I will become a school teacher when I grow up, and every December 12th, I will teach them the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and if you bless me with any children in the future, every year on that feast day, I'm going to tell them the story of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And sure enough, God came through with that miraculous, as we consider in our family, return to the faith of my grandmother. And she died a Catholic in good standing and a model Catholic. And sure enough, every single year, December 12th, we heard that great story of the miracles of Our Lady of Guadalupe. So that kind of was stuck in my mind, and later in life I came back to that. So that was
beautiful.
Really how it all began.
Well, you know, Michael, I think that Guadalupe is one of the most engaging, compelling, mysterious stories of a series of miracles through her apparition. I mean, I think you can tell that to any age, and you will, if you tell it well and you tell it accurately, you will have a riveted audience. I mean, it's just full of mystery.
Absolutely. And I'm a little bit biased, of course. I do love Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I worked with that shrine there in La Crosse for many years, but I consider it to be the second greatest story ever told. I think it's, like you say, full of mystery. And we have this, it's beyond mystery because we have this object, this toma,
yes,
the cloak of St. Juan Diego that still exists dating back to 1531 or so. And, you know, science can't explain how it exists. So that's a pretty neat thing with all the advancement in science. They know everything, but they don't know how Our Lady of Guadalupe's image is emblazoned on that cloak.
Painted,
it's absolutely amazing.
Painted by God himself. What are the most difficult types of miracles to affirm or to get through the vetting of the Catholic Church?
The easiest ones, from my point of view, I'll answer it this way, are the Eucharistic miracles, where they find true blood and true flesh mixed in with the host, which was formerly bread. Those are easy. Science can validate that, no problem. The hardest ones are those where you have to rely on the testimony of a reliable witness. And those, of course, are Marian apparitions and things like this. And so when you have these great examples of people reporting Marian apparitions, it's always easier when there's multiple people involved. But when there's a single visionary, you're really relying on that testimony. But they look at the healings, the conversions, the vocations, and other miracles that surround an apparition event. So it's really complicated, though, the way the Church has to look at these apparition cases.
Well, and some miracles are just little personal miracles. Maybe they're not meant to go widescreen. You know, they don't have to be broadcast and go through all the public scrutiny. Other miracles, like some of these Marian apparitions, Fatima certainly, there is so much for us all to learn that we need to hear the message and we need to have it validated. And it's, we're grateful that the Church deems that worthy for belief.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You hit on an absolutely perfect point. We have miracles with a lowercase m, you know, that's the finding of a lost wallet or a wedding ring or whatever it might be. We've all experienced things of this nature. But then there are the miracles with the big M, which is those great miracles like Our Lady of Fatima. And people have this sort of conception that the Catholic Church sends out these Vatican investigators every time there's something miraculous that pops up and they go send them out to go look at it. The only time the Church ever investigates miracles are, well, healing miracles for canonizations and at Lourdes. But also if there's a great groundswell of support around an event, such as Fatima. So many people, 70,000 people were there for the great sun miracle of Fatima. Mm-hmm. When people are claiming visions in a parish, for example, if they're doing it in their own home and nobody knows about it, the Church will never investigate ever. Mm-hmm. But when the crowds start coming, when the questions start being asked, when the phone starts ringing off the hook at the bishop's office, then they will go in and investigate, and only then. So really, it's a pastoral concern. You know, how are the faithful interacting with these claims of miracles?
Mm-hmm. Do you find that people want to believe in miracles, or do you find that most human nature is very skeptical of miracles?
It's so interesting. I mean, I think I myself consider myself to have the heart of a believer, but the mind of a skeptic.
Right? Perfect.
We all have a little bit of that, where miracles are so inspiring. You know, every single person, even if you're an atheist or an agnostic, you still have to have an explanation for the inexplicable, right? And we've all had these times when we're stuck, where we're in great trouble, where we have the illness of a loved one or a situation that is absolutely seems unsolvable without the help of divine intervention. So we all need a good miracle once in a while.
Yeah,
so
we do.
And every single Catholic, by virtue of being Christian, has to believe in the incarnation and the resurrection.
Right.
So it's part of our faith to embrace miracles. So I think it's important to just about everybody.
Well, and earlier in our show, we had some guests that work for Habitat for Humanity. And we were saying, you know, sometimes we are a channel for a miracle in someone's life. I mean, someone that receives a key to a home when they've been destitute for several years and fallen on bad luck. I mean, that they certainly consider that a miracle in their life. It doesn't have to go through all that scrutiny. Hey, so Michael, tell us about the recent canonization of the children from Fatima. Did those have some interesting miracles associated with them?
Well, it's so interesting. And I'll be going to Fatima with a pilgrim group, May 11th through May 18th. Check it out, Miracle.
Ooh, for the 100-year anniversary. Okay.
For the 100-year anniversary. And it just got even more special because they're going to be canonizing those two children visionaries, two out of the three, Francisco and Jacinta. Of course, Lucia is her cause open. But Pope Francis just validated a miracle about a week ago that puts them in line to be canonized. So the timing works out beautifully. And you can tell Pope Francis has a great devotion to Our Lady of Fatima, having dedicated his papacy to her, and then making sure that miracle was approved just in time for the canonization. But, you know, so I talked to the vice postulator in Fatima on my radio show and this past week, and that was such an incredible conversation because she told me, you know, the sort of the background of the miracle, but they can't release it publicly. I was only able to talk to her offline a little bit, and we talked more in general, but it was a Brazilian boy who had a healing that's been validated by the church. And I'm sure that news will come out eventually, but they're kind of keeping it under wraps.
You're kind of on the you've got the miracle hotline going on there, Michael.
Oh, I'm the real miracle hunter, you know.
And let's remind our listeners, because I think I stepped on your line when you were talking about the pilgrimage that you are leading to go to Fatima for the 100-year anniversary. They can go to miraclehunter.com/tours. Is that correct?
Thank you very much. Miraclehunter.com/tours is the place to go. There's still just a couple of spots left. Of course, all the hotel rooms are being gobbled up there in Fatima.
Oh, yeah.
They're impossible to hold on to. But we've got a few left, so people who are interested can sign up. And we'll be going to Lourdes, Fatima, Guadalupe in Spain, Madrid, and Zaragoza, the site of the first Marianne Virgin. So
awesome,
really,
awesome. And of course, we want our listeners also to be on the lookout for your new show, They Might Be Saints, about the canonization miracles of the saints that Michael O'Neill will be hosting. Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. We're going to have you back on to hear more about that tour of Fatima after you go. We want lots of good stories, okay?
I appreciate it. God bless.
God bless. Thanks, Michael. Hey, I love all that stuff about miracles. It's so cool. We had a fun show today. Hey, if you would like to see some pictures from today's show, or you'd like to just stay in touch with us, go to our Facebook page. Go to Facebook.com/CallMeCatholic and join us.
Just 60 more likes, approximately. We'll get to 1,500.
Jim's got the ticker out. Just counting the likes.
Us. Please like
us. We got a big family. We love everybody, and whoever's in there is meant to be in there.
Almost to 1,500. It's huge.
Don't sound desperate. Don't sound desperate. Okay, coming up next on EWTN is Barbara McGuigan with The Good Fight, 2 hours of very good conversation about pro-life issues. Join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Normandin, but you know, you can just call me Catholic. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.